Chapter 25. 2 days later, he found his regiment and reported at the company office. There was no sign of the sergeant major. Only a clerk was sitting there, idle at the desk. The village lay 120 kilometers west of the last position Graber had seen.
How are things here?
He asked. Shitty. How was your furlough?
Half and half. Has much happened?
Plenty. You can see for yourself where we are.
What's become of the men?
One platoon is digging trenches, another is burying the dead. They'll be back at noon.
Have there been many changes?
You'll see. I don't know who was still here when you left. We've had a lot of replacements.
Children.
They die like flies in winter. Not the slightest idea what war's about.
We have a new sarge. The old one is dead. Fat Meinert.
Do you mean he went up front?
No. He got his in the latrine. Flew into the air along with all the muck.
The clerk yawned.
You'll see what's up.
Why didn't you arrange to get a nice little bomb splinter in your ass while you were home?
Yes, Graber said. Why not? You just don't get any good ideas until it's too late.
I'd have arranged to be a couple more days late, too. No one here would have missed you.
That's something else that doesn't occur to you until you're back. Graber walked through the village. It was like the one he had been in last. All these villages were alike. They were all devastated in the same way. The only difference was that now there was hardly any snow. Everything was wet and muddy. Your boots sank in deep and the earth held them fast, as though it wanted to drag them off. Along the main street, boards had been laid end to end so that you could walk on them. They squelched in the water, and when you stepped on one end, the other rose up dripping. The sun was shining, and it was fairly warm. It seemed to Graber much warmer than in Germany. He listened to the front. Heavy artillery fire rolled and swelled and ebbed away. He located the cellar to which the clerk had assigned him and stowed his things in a vacant spot. He was tremendously irritated that he had not stayed on furlough a day or two longer. Actually, no one here seemed to need him. He set out again. Trenches had been dug in front of the village. Now they were full of water, and the walls were beginning to cave in. In a few places, small concrete bunkers had been built. They stood like gravestones in the sodden landscape. Graber walked back. On the main street, he saw Raha, the company commander. He was balancing on the boards like a stork with horn-rimmed glasses. Graber reported to him.
You're in luck, Raha said. Just after you left, all leaves were canceled.
He looked at Graber with his bright eyes.
Was it worthwhile?
Yes, Graber replied.
That's good. We're in a pretty dirty spot here. This is only a temporary position. We'll probably fall back on the reserve position that has just been reinforced. Did you see it? You must have come right through there.
No, I did not see it.
No?
No, sir, Graber said.
It's about 40 kilometers from here.
It must have been night when we came through. I slept a good deal.
That's it, no doubt.
Raha looked searchingly at Graber again, as though he wanted to ask something more. Then he said,
Your platoon leader was killed, Lieutenant Mueller. Now you have Lieutenant Moss.
Yes, sir. Raha poked with his walking stick in the wet clay.
As long as the mud hangs on this way, it's hard for the Russians to move up artillery and tanks. That gives us time to regroup. Everything has its good and bad side, eh? Glad you're back, Graber. We need old hands to train the young recruits.
He went on poking in the mud.
How was it back there?
Just about the way it is here. Lots of air raids.
Really? As bad as that?
I don't know how bad it was in comparison with the other cities, but every couple of days there was at least one raid.
Raha looked at him as though he expected him to say more, but Graber kept quiet.
The others came back at noon.
The furlough boy, Immermann said.
Man alive, what made you come back into this crap? Why didn't you desert?
Where to? Graber asked. Immermann scratched his head.
Switzerland, he said then.
I didn't think of that, wise guy.
despite the fact that special luxury trains for deserters leave daily for Switzerland. They have red crosses painted on the roofs so they won't be bombed. And all along the Swiss border stand triumphal arches with the inscription, "Welcome." Know anything else, you joker? And since when have you dared to talk this way?
I've always dared. You've just forgotten that back in the whispering homeland. Besides, we're in retreat. We are almost in flight. With every 100 kilometers we retire, the tone gets a bit freer.
Immermann began to clean the dirt off his uniform.
Müller is dead, he said. Meineke and Schröder are in the hospital. Mücke got shot in the stomach. They say he kicked off in Warsaw. Which of the old crowd were still here?
That's right, Berning lost his right leg, bled to death.
Hirschland, Graber said.
Hirschland? What's the matter with him?
He's dead too.
Nonsense, he's sitting right over there.
Graber looked over.
It was true. Hirschland was sitting on an old barrel cleaning his mess kit.
Damn it, he thought. What does this mean?
His mother got a report that he'd been killed. I've got to ask him.
He walked over to Hirschland.
I went to see your mother, he said.
Did you really? You didn't forget? I never thought you'd do it.
Why not?
I'm not used to having people do things for me.
Graber recalled that he had almost forgotten.
How is she? How is she getting along? Hirschland asked. Did you tell her that I was fine?
Hirschland, your mother thinks you are dead. She got a report from the company.
What? That's impossible.
She told me so herself.
Hirschland stared at Graber.
But I write to her almost every day.
She thinks they're letters you wrote before. Have you any idea how it could have happened? After all, there aren't two Hirschlands.
No. Someone must have done it on purpose.
No one would do something like that on purpose.
No, not even Steinbrenner.
Is he still alive?
Of course. And he was assigned to the office for 2 days after the sergeant major was killed. The clerk was sick at the time.
But that would be a stinking forgery.
Yes.
Rahe is supposed to sign those letters. My mother doesn't know that. One signature is as good as another to her.
The thing suddenly appeared more probable to Graber than it had at first.
What a swinish trick, he growled. It's hard to believe. Just why would the bastard want to do it?
For fun. To educate me. After all, I have Jewish blood.
What did my mother say? She was calm. You must write her right away. Tell her what I have said. She will remember that I was there.
It will be a long time before she gets it.
Graber saw that Hirschland's lips were trembling.
We'll go to the office, he announced. We'll have the correction made from there. They'll have to send a telegram. Otherwise, we'll go to Rahe.
We can't do that.
Why not? We can do even more. We can report Steinbrenner.
Not I.
I can't do that. I can't prove a thing. And even if... No, I can't make a complaint. Not I. Don't you understand that?
Yes, Hirschland, Graber said grimly. But all that won't last forever. He met Steinbrenner after supper. Steinbrenner was brown and cheerful. He looked like a sunburned gothic angel.
How's morale at home?
He asked. Graber put down his mess kit. When we got back to the border, he said, we were called together by an SS captain and told that no one of us was to say a word about the situation at home under penalty of the severest punishment. Steinbrenner laughed.
I'm in the SS myself. You can tell me safely.
Then I'd be a pretty ass. The severest punishment means being shot as a saboteur of the army's plans.
Steinbrenner stopped laughing.
You say that as though there was something to tell, as though there had been catastrophes. I say nothing at all. I am simply repeating what the SS captain told us.
Steinbrenner regarded Graber calculatingly.
You got married, eh?
How did you know?
I know everything.
You found it out in the office. Don't give yourself airs. You're in the office a good deal, aren't you?
I'm there as much as I need to be. When I get my leave, I'm going to get married too.
Really? Do you know to whom?
The daughter of the SS Commandant in my hometown.
Naturally. Steinbrenner missed the irony.
The combination of bloodlines is first rate, he declared, completely absorbed in his subject. Nordic Frisian on my side, Rhenish Saxon on hers. We'll get every parenthood assistance and racial stipend. The children will naturally have special educational advantages, everything that the party has to give. In 5 years, my wife will be eligible for an important post in the Reich's Women's Auxiliary as a model mother. If, in the meantime, we have twins or triplets, the Führer himself will be their godfather, perhaps in just 2 or 3 years. For the fifth child, he will be in any case. Then my career will be splendidly assured. Picture that.
I am picturing it.
Selective breeding of the race. We've not only got to root out the Jews, we've also got to replace them with pure-blooded Germans, a new race of leaders.
Have you rooted out many Jews? Steinbrenner grinned.
If you could see my conduct records, you wouldn't have to ask. Those were the times.
He bent over confidentially toward Graeber.
I've put in for a transfer, back to an SS division. There's more going on there, and you've got better chances. Everything's on a bigger scale. No boring court-martials for every lousy Russian. They get rid of them in batches. Not long ago, 300 Polish and Russian traitors in one afternoon. 6 men got the Distinguished Service Cross for that. Here, all that turns up is a few measly guerrillas. You don't get any decorations for that. We haven't had more than half a dozen since you left. In the cleanup battalions and in the SS Security Service, they get hundreds and hundreds. A man can get ahead there.
Graeber stared out into the red Russian evening. A few crows were flapping about like dark rags. Steinbrenner was the perfect product of the party. He was perfectly healthy, in perfect physical training, perfectly devoid of any thoughts of his own, and perfectly inhuman. He was an automaton for whom polishing a gun, exercising, and killing were all the same. You sent the announcement of Hirschlant's death to his mother, didn't you? Graeber asked.
Who says so?
I know it.
You know nothing at all. How could you know?
I found out. That was a fine joke. Steinbrenner laughed. He had no ear for irony. His pretty face beamed with satisfaction.
You think so, too? Just imagine the expression on that old woman's face. And nothing can happen to me. Hirschlant will be careful not to say anything. And even if he did, it was simply a mistake. Could happen any time.
Graeber looked at him closely. You have nerve, he said.
Nerve? That doesn't take nerve, just a sense of humor.
You're wrong. It takes nerve. Anyone who does a thing like that always dies himself soon after. That's well known. Steinbrenner laughed aloud.
Drivel! That's an old wives' tale.
It's not an old wives' tale. Anyone who does that summons his own death. That's an established fact.
Oh, listen,
Steinbrenner said.
You don't mean you believe that yourself.
I do believe it. So should you. It's an old Germanic belief. I wouldn't like to be in your boots.
You're crazy.
Steinbrenner stood up. He was no longer laughing. I knew 2 people who did something similar. Both were killed shortly after. Another was lucky. He only got shot in the balls. Naturally, it made him impotent. Perhaps you'll get off as cheaply as that. Then, naturally, there won't be any twins or triplets. But of course, someone else could always take care of that for you. In the party, the only important thing is purity of blood, not the individual. Steinbrenner stared at Graeber.
Man, what an unfeeling ass you are, he said. Have you really always been like that? Besides, that's all drivel, drivel with gravy on it.
For a minute longer, he stood there waiting. Then he walked off. Graeber leaned back. The front was rumbling. The crows flew about. Suddenly it seemed to him as though he had never been away. He had sentry duty from midnight until 2 o'clock. His route lay around the village. The ruins stood out, black against the fireworks of the front. The sky shook, brightening and darkening with the muzzle flashes of the artillery. His boots groaned in the tough mud like damned souls.
The pain came upon him swiftly and surprisingly and without any warning. He had not been thinking of anything and had been in a stupor as on the days of his journey. Now suddenly and without transition, pain cut through him as though he were being torn to ribbons. He stood still and waited. He made no move. He waited for the knife to begin to turn, to become torment and realization of torment, to acquire a name and with the name to become localized and accessible to reason and solace, or at least to stoic acceptance. It did not come. Nothing was there but the clear pain of loss. It was a loss forever. Nowhere was there a bridge. He had had it, and it was lost. He listened inward. Somewhere there must still be a voice. An echo of hope must still linger somewhere. But he found nothing. There were only emptiness and nameless pain. It is too early, he thought. It will come back later, when the pain has passed. He tried to conjure it up. He did not want it to tear itself away. He wanted to hold on to it, even if the pain became unbearable. It would come back if he only persevered, he thought. He whispered names and tried to remember. Shrouded by mist, Elizabeth's distracted face appeared. It was the way it had been when he had last seen it. All her other faces were blurred. This one alone became clear. He tried to picture Frau Witte's garden and house. He could do it, but it was as though he were striking the keys of a piano that gave no sound. What has happened? He thought. Perhaps she has had an accident. Perhaps she is unconscious. Perhaps at this very moment the house is caving in. Perhaps she is dead. He tore his boots out of the mud. The damp earth sighed. He realized that he was sweating.
That's going to tire you out, someone said.
It was Zauer. He was standing in the corner of a ruined stall.
What's more, it can be heard for at least a kilometer, he went on. What are you trying to do? Setting up exercises?
Zauer, you're married, aren't you?
Of course. When you have a farm, you have to be married. Without a woman, a farm's no good.
Have you been married a long time?
15 years. Why?
What's it like when you've been married for such a long time?
The questions you ask, man. What should it be like?
Is it like an anchor that holds you? Something you think about all the time and want to get back to?
What do you mean, anchor? Of course I think about it. I've been thinking about it all day, if you want to know. It's time for spring sowing and planting. You get silly in the head just thinking about it.
I don't mean your farm. I mean your wife.
They go together. I've just explained it to you. Without a woman, a farm's no good. But what do you get from it? Nothing but worry. On top of that, there's Immermann always trying to tell you that the prisoners of war lie in bed with every woman who's alone. Zauer blew his nose. It's a big double bed, he added for some mysterious reason.
Immermann doesn't know what he's talking about.
He says that once a woman has found out what a man is, she can't hold out for long without one. She's sure to find another for herself.
Oh, crap, Graeber said, suddenly furious. That damned communist thinks everyone's the same. There's no greater nonsense in the world.